Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 72 on Monday, the 14th of November, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
And we meet again on a Monday.
Yes, it is a Monday. It is a Monday.
Yes, and it's my fault this time. Last week it was definitely your fault. This week it's my fault. And next week
I will pass on how it was my fault.
Yeah. Okay. So it's your fault.
Yeah. And next week, it's someone else's fault.
Oh, that's right. It is someone else's fault. Yes, yes, yes. Next week we will be... Yes, yes. Next week we'll be recording on Monday again. So this isn't a normal thing, folks.
No, we will be getting back to a Wednesday morning publication.
Yes. Yeah. It messes up my entire mind and schedule and stuff. So yeah, we have to get back to it. But this time it's my fault because I'm flying tomorrow night. So I have to do it on Monday.
Well, talking of messing up, though, Alan.
Oh, talking of messing up, yes.
We have a bit of follow-up, don't we? Okay, now you get on the naughty stool and tell the boys and girls what you did.
Made a mistake.
Which is not good for us, because we're happy to point out others' mistakes.
Well, yes. Yes. So as a result, we should be quite happy to point out our own mistakes. But the couple of weeks ago, we talked about Otto. And the autonomous Budweiser delivery. And I said, oh, they're a Canadian company. And they're not. They're actually an Israeli company, not Canadian. There are two different companies. There's Otto and there's OT.TO, both of which are to do with autonomous robots and vehicles and generally not needing people. And I got them mixed up.
I'd personally like to thank Nir Khan for pointing out your mistake.
Yes, I was going to thank Nir for that one. So, yeah, apologies, guys. I made a mistake. There are two very similarly named companies, and I got the wrong one because it was an off week. It really was. So there we go.
I think they'll forgive us, Alan.
I hope so. I hope so. We'll try and come clean anyway.
Yes.
However... will people be able to forgive Renault?
I don't know. Follow-up, because if you remember a few months ago, maybe even the start of the year, I can't remember, but Renault was raided by French officials over diesel engines and emissions and all the rest of it. And French officials have passed on a file to prosecutors because they're a little bit suspicious of the engine technologies, and that they feel they have actually broken the law. So
I'm sorry, can I just quickly point out, so this is the French government, the first giving serious consideration to prosecuting a car company that is significantly owned by the French government.
Yes.
It's like the opposite of protectionism. When you say this relationship, you know, relating to the French, this is making my brain get ready to explode. This feels almost unheard of.
Well, for that alone, forgetting what had happened or what they were being told off for, or suspicious they've broken the law, the fact that the French government is prepared to make this step must be quite worrying for Renault.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah.
But Renault have, in Renault's defence, because we pretend to be balanced and equal here, but in Renault have said that their vehicles are not equipped with cheating software affecting anti-pollution systems. They say that they have been designed and installed and run in accordance with the laws and regulations that they are tested under.
Mm-hmm.
So we shall wait to see, because all that's happened is the file's been passed on to prosecutors. Prosecutors have not yet stated whether they think there is sufficient evidence to hold a criminal case or start criminal proceedings. So
it does puzzle me somewhat, though, that the Auto News Europe, which is one of the driest sources that we use on here, they did say... I'll just read out the entire paragraph. So Renault had explained the Nitrous oxide cutting, exhaust gas recirculation in its top seven diesel engines have been found to cause serious turbo clogging problems. Engineers responded by programming the EGR to shut down outside the narrow thermal window, inverted commas there, of air intake temperatures of 17 to 35 degrees Celsius. While passing regulatory tests carried out at room temperature over short periods, the protocol sent nitrogen oxide emissions sky high on the road. For Auto News to use terms like sky high when it's not a quote is quite unusual, really.
Well, they've picked temperature range that is pretty much most of the temperature of Europe, except for a few months in the winter until you go further north. So, you know, 17 to 35 degrees Celsius.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. So we have to wait and see, but at least there has actually been some ramifications from these raids.
Yes.
Which I wasn't expecting, I have to say.
No. I was expecting it to be all brushed under Le Tepi or something. So, yeah.
Because as far as I can tell from all the Dieselgate stuff, that manufacturers are allowed to use, it's not a defeat device, but able to program the engines to change its running under certain circumstances if they declare it and it's for safety reasons, i.e. to protect the engine.
Mm-hmm.
It's when a manufacturer doesn't tell the regulatory bodies that it's doing that they get in trouble.
That seems to be the case.
Which is a major issue for anybody who sits there and looks at this remotely balanced, because there's such a massive loophole, which is obviously where a lot of people are campaigning against in the new legislation and testing regime that is yet to be agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And that's why people are so keen to actually change that testing regime. Cool.
Yeah. Right, let's move on, but it's still follow-up.
And following up from that, Volkswagen has updated some of its carbon dioxide emissions ratings.
Again.
Again. They're not huge changes. The biggest alteration is on a 1.6 TDI Golf with a manual gearbox, so it's not a model that sells or anything. which has been updated from 99 grams per kilometre to 103 grams per kilometre.
Sorry to cut you off there, though.
Oh, sorry.
Is 99 grams still a special target for VED?
I honestly can't remember. I should probably know.
Because if it is, you're going to be a little bit ticked off if you own.
Yes.
It's okay, they can change, but if they change and throw you into a different tax bracket.
Yeah, but was there not a special case made by the Chancellor and the Treasury about this? Because
that was Dieselgate ones. They're saying that this is in the normal lifetime of the engine, and these things change because in the Autocar article that we've got, that will be in the show notes, there's an academic that says, look, no, this is what happens. And we did explain this last time. I think it was episode 28
But it's fine because it's from when you bought it.
Okay, yeah, right.
Fair enough. The CO2. So it won't change. It won't retrospectively change because it's what it was when you bought it. It's what was declared when it was new.
Okay. And you watch if 99 grams is key, you watch people not now buying.
It's going to be so difficult. So is it still 100 grams per kilometre as the paying the congestion charge?
Is it not 75, or is that what they want to bring it down to?
Oh, I can't remember. The trouble is, we talk about this so much, you then forget what people have talked about and what things actually are. It was for a while, anyway. So I think that was that. That was why that 100 grams per kilometre was in.
It was like the magic number, wasn't it?
It might have been company car tax. Does that not drop it into the 7% or something?
Could be.
Anyway, we shall check that one out and find out when we find out. So, yeah. yeah, that's a bit of a pain, but it may well be that this is just making news because it's Volkswagen making the changes, of course.
Yes.
And you just don't notice when anybody else does it.
Yeah, I think it is a bit of that.
Anyhow, some new news.
New news. The government have announced new penalties for that they wish to bring in next year, concerned with people, drivers found using mobile phones whilst at the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And these are apparently zero tolerance.
Yes.
So you will not get the chance to go on a remedial driving course. And the lowest penalty is now going to be 6 points on the licence. And fines will go up from £100 to £200.
Mm-hmm.
And this is on the back of a big campaign that many newspapers claimed victory in, that got the government to pay attention to the fact that people are using a mobile phone behind the wheel all the time and no one's getting caught, really. And we've discussed that topic before, and we've discussed what we consider is this a quite a good solution to it. But won't happen. So you sort of think that's great, zero tolerance, wonderful. Is it going to make any difference to people? Probably not, because they'll think they can get away with it.
And there is a note here that the number of drivers in the UK caught on their phones has decreased by 84% since 2011.
It would be interesting to know the number of highway patrol vehicles that
I knew that was coming. That was...
correlates to that. I love it when people throw a stat out, but if we can look at all sides of the stats, that would be handy.
Yes, it would. Mm. Totally. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Oh, and this also, lines up with this week as we record. The police announced in England and Wales that they're having a crackdown on people using mobile phones behind the wheel.
Yes.
So we'll see a short spike for a week, because that's all they'll be worried about. And then it'll go back to people driving on their phones.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm in Sweden, where you're allowed to do all that kind of thing.
I can't believe.
So there. I was just making sure I got that in before Krista got that one.
Studies have been shown,
to be perfectly honest,
that even with hands free,
because he seems to, Krista seems to pop in with that any time.
Yes, I know he does. I think he just baits now.
I think he does, to be perfectly honest.
But there's so many academic and scientific studies that have proven that even you driving whilst using a mobile phone on hands free, you are the equivalent of X number of times over the limit with drink, and yet we still think it's acceptable. I don't get it myself, personally. Right, let's move on before I get all moany and groany, or more moany and groany.
Yeah. Good news, I think. And that is that, according to a BBC News website and Charge Place Scotland, the use of electric car charging points across Scotland has more than doubled in the past year. Part of that may well show that 1.5 times more electric vehicles were licensed in Scotland last year as opposed to the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Just over 3,500 in the last 12 months, up until August. There. What they do point out, though, is that the number of charging points, well, there are a lot of charging points around, but the actual use of the charging points is very, very focused.
Yeah.
So in the area of lowest usage, which is Dumfries and Galloway, there are 20 charging points in Dumfries and Galloway. 8 were used in a year. Oh, no. We used in August, pardon me. Okay.
Yes, this is all about August. This is
just August.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just 8 out of 20 charging points in Dumfries and Galloway were used in August. There's a little bit of, well, that makes sense, because Dumfries and Galloway is a very rural area of Scotland, for those of you who aren't aware. So there's quite long distances between places, so people are less likely to be happy to adopt an electric vehicle. In Dumfries and Galloway, for example, Whereas in places like Glasgow and Edinburgh, Glasgow has 76 charging points, of which 68 were used in August. But then Edinburgh, which Edinburgh hates cars. Let's make that completely clear to anyone who's not familiar with trying to travel around Edinburgh with something with four wheels. Only 46 out of 68 charging points were used. It does make you question a couple of things. One, do people actually use them, or do they just charge at home and then go out and go home and charge at home again? Or are they in really stupid places?
Or were they working?
Or were they working? Well, that's the other point.
Because we've seen enough on Twitter, haven't we, of people getting to a charging point, particularly journalists who are testing out an electric vehicle or electrified vehicle, arriving because they're going, oh, thank you, there's a charging point on this motorway. Or I've not got the right code, or I'm not in this service, or whatever it is. You know, it's just making that step harder, isn't it?
Exactly. And, yeah, it is. The figures, by the way, come from part of a RAC Foundation work to gather stuff. It doesn't include any domestic charging points. But as Steve Gooding, the director of the RAC Foundation, says in this BBC article, they say that when it comes to buying a house, location, location, location is everything. And so it goes with electric charging points. Facilities need to be in places where people will use them. The other thing is rapid chargers are getting disproportionate amount of use. So the speed of take up and the speed of just being able to charge a car when you're out is important as well.
Yep.
Yeah, thought that was quite interesting.
No, it is. It's good news. It's good to see it's stretching out now. If they could sort of, you can see. I don't want to say it's like civilization moving out, but if they want people to visit,
that is when you come to Dumfries and Galloway.
You can say that. I cannot possibly comment. If you want people to go and visit these areas and get them to adopt further out, then we have to link up the networks, don't we?
Yeah, and there is a certain amount of chicken and egg here, of course, where you have to have enough. If there aren't enough charging points, people won't buy the electric cars. People buy the electric cars. You know, they need the charging points in place for when they buy them. So there is, you know, there is a balance between the two just there. So
yeah, it would be interesting to see some how of these much it costs to actually install a charging point or a couple of charging points, because that could be one way that manufacturers get adoption in areas that aren't served by them well at the moment.
Well, the thing is, it'll depend a lot on where you're installing it. So if you're installing it in a public car park, it's probably going to be really quite expensive. You know, a council car park.
Yeah.
If you're installing it as a supermarket in a supermarket car park where you're just taking a spur off the supermarket feed, it's probably not going to be very much at all. And if you're actually installing it relatively rurally, where it might not be a particularly fast one, but you might have sort of wind and solar and whatever else there as well, then it might actually not cost that much at all.
Mm.
So I suppose it depends on the level of charger and where you're charging it.
I just think it's a step up from the you get a free home charging installation adapter, kit for your house when you buy this car. Oh, and by the way, we've installed, you know, six chargers between Edinburgh and Aberdeen to make sure you can go about your daily life or whatever.
Yeah, and to join some of those up, remember we talked about that Renault app recently as well, which wasn't just a single charging system, and it let you your charging group, and it let you pay centrally for whatever network it was you were using, rather than having to open six or seven apps.
Ding.
Open six or seven apps and check who's it. Oh no, there's an EDF one here, and there isn't one of these ones. Is there ChargeMaster en route and all this? It was all together in one app, which showed you the relative costs, if any, of using those charging points. So that's a step in the right direction.
I think that would make an interesting road trip, Alan. Just I'm digressing here. Seriously,
you are because
for us,
would it?
If we were to get an electric vehicle and take it around Britain, not using motorways, and see how easy that was.
Yeah, yes, I'm up for that. This is the first time we've discussed this, folks, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I really have. Just
so this one is being pounced.
But when he was, when Alan was discussing it there, it actually, that sounded an interesting one of, you know, maybe it's the cliched Land's End to John O'Groats, and, you know, the sun will shine on us, unlike on smooth traffic, if we did that. But,
oh, yes.
Or maybe we did the coast, all the way around the coast.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm up for that.
Okay, well, we'll have to think on that and maybe discuss it with...
Sucker someone into that.
...a few manufacturers and see if anybody's interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And any charging companies. Sorry, yeah, everyone, we've had a slight business meeting there in the middle.
Yeah, these are the discussions that normally happen before and after recording, not right in the middle of it.
But I think that would be an interesting one to do. Yeah, okay, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, yes. I had another idea, but then decided it had probably been done as well, so I'll be there.
Okay.
Yeah, that one later. Anyway, continuing with electric cars and sort of electric vehicle manufacture, there's a story about Tesla this week, which is not negative.
No. We searched high and low. And we stepped away from people having a pop at Tesla and people who love Tesla having a pop back. And this is that Tesla are going to buy a German company called Grohmann Engineering to help them improve and increase the amount of automated manufacturing they can do. Now, this all is, looking at it from an outsider's point of view, seems to be quite essential if they are to hit the target of 500,000 cars in 14 months' time, or in 2018. So 2018 is quite it's another 12 months. So they're not saying from January the 1st. I was being facetious there. But they are going to have to jump from what's expected to be 80,000 cars this year to 500,000 in basically 12 to 18 months, which is a massive ask. And I know they've been hiring people who have more expertise in mass production, and looking at things like their Model 3, they have simplified design and engineering from, say, their Model X.
Yeah. I don't think anything's as complicated as a Model X.
Mm.
By the way, there's an interesting drive of a Model X by Matt Farah. One of his one takes last week was a Model X that he had borrowed, hired, strange setup, there, which is quite interesting, just about him and his driving, his feeling driving it. So it's a really good one take if you subscribe to or search for the Smoking Tire on YouTube. Then that's quite good. Sorry. Anyway, it's my turn to go off on tangent.
Yes.
But this is Grohmann's... But acquiring Grohmann's an interesting one because it gives Tesla... I mean, they can still sell Grohmann's services to other people, so it gives them another revenue stream, essentially, as well as... meaning that they have a lot of knowledge and expertise that they can apply to their own construction in their gigafactories.
Yeah.
Or gigafactory, and then further gigafactories, probably in Germany, I would imagine, if they own Grohmann now.
They're looking at Europe, aren't they? And there was mention of the UK, but I think that was only from a design point of view or engineering point of view.
They already have, Tesla already have a factory of sorts in the Netherlands, because I believe that many of their current cars come in two pieces. The chassis and the platform comes in, and then the body, the top half comes in, and they have to bolt them together, because that means that there's some form of manufacturer or something going on in the EU, so...
Tax breaks, etc.
So I think it's a tax breaky thing, because yes, I heard about that a little while ago, that kind of thing happened.
Yeah. Right, let's move on, and sticking with electric, though.
We're real theme tonight.
Yes, it is. That was by accident, actually. I hadn't planned to set that up that way. Mm-hmm. But I shall pass us over to our motoring correspondent.
Yeah, and here I am. Here we are, standing in the market in Marrakesh. No, the Marrakesh E3 was this weekend, I actually managed to watch it, which made a change. But yeah, it was fantastic. Really good piece of racing, brand new track, brand new street circuit. It looked like a fantastic event, really. It did loads of close, just the usual sort of really, really close racing where the cars are within, you know, the cars are within inches of each other, sometimes negatively. they're between each other. It's really close, tight track, and also a healthy dose of strategy as to when people come in and when they swap and stuff. So the race was the race was won by Sebastian Buemi, who it was a well deserved win, by the way, because he did. They've had to make a slight amendment to some of the regulations, actually, because he got knocked back 5 paces after qualifying because it turned out his fire extinguisher was underweight. They discovered, though, the Renault team pointed out that was actually because it hit a curb very hard and that had actually knocked it and it had released slightly.
I was going to say he didn't do the office chair trick of sticking it to the back of an office chair and then pressing it to make the car go faster.
No, he didn't.
He didn't do that.
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought that might be some.
So there's probably going to be
a
change.
Loophole.
No.
They exploited use of CO2.
The race series is all about reducing the amount of CO2, and they've got the canisters and bang, make them go quicker. So that dropped him right down, and then he basically had to fight his way back up through. Now, there was some fantastic driving by Felix Rosenqvist as well. He started on pole. His Super Pole qualifying lap was, from the camera angles, it was mostly sideways. It was a fantastic piece of driving. Someone just really rigging a car right on the edge. It was full 10-10 stuff. It was brilliant, which is much better than Nico Prost managed. He was trying to drive at 12-10, and as a result was significantly slower and did not do very well in qualifying. But it made it really interesting. Rosenqvist led quite a lot of the way through the race, but Buemi just fought his way up and got in there. He ruined it for me, though, because we've all seen that Fry and Laurie sketch with the race driver, haven't we, where he's just so negative having won the race. You know, so are you happy you won? Well, we made a number of mistakes. Are you happy you won? And that was basically what I was screaming at the TV, as he was like, well, this was not a good day for the team. We could have improved some things. It's just like, you've just won, you idiot. So that was quite frustrating. But other than that, really good race, as ever with these. I mean, I mean, some people go, well, they're not very fast, but it doesn't matter when they're so close in such a constrained
But there was
space.
A Brit in second as well.
There was, Sam Bird.
Yeah.
Sam Bird was saying, pardon
DS
me.
Virgin.
He's my champ. Yes.
So, that was good. I haven't watched it yet, but it's as a very much peripheral viewer of this, because I have small people who don't allow me to watch whatever I like, whenever I like.
You mean you don't want to watch Peppa Pig?
No, we're beyond that, thankfully.
No, that's a lucky break.
Oh, God. And Ben and Holly, we're beyond that. But it does end. If there's any parents out there with young children, it does end. Trust me. You know, you need to hear that, but it does end. But it's good to see some less familiar names up in the top five.
Mm. Yeah, it's great stuff. Yeah, that's it. Worth watching. There's a long wait. There's something like 12 weeks until the next one.
93 days, according to
93 days.
Formula E's website, which there will be a link in the show notes.
Yes,
you can see the countdown ticker and leave it up in your in your Firefox or Google Chrome, and leave that just ticking away all the way down.
The season returns in Buenos Aires on February the 18th is next. So it's off to Argentina. There will be a sort of small race. Oh, it's the Vegas E-Race on January the 7th as well. They've been going around and people have been racing against the Formula E drivers to see how well they do in simulators, and they had that stuff on there. Been continuing that. And so the grand final of that E-Racing is at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas in January. And it'll be a virtual race. All the drivers, all the Formula E drivers will be taking part, but it will be possible there's $1 million prize fund there for esports. So
you're not saying driving. There's another opportunity for fan engagement there, are you, by any chance, Alan?
Do you know there is? And the Sims, by the way, if you're at the race, is certainly in London, busy all day.
Did you see, I'm not sure you saw, but I retweeted the viewing figures of the Formula E compared to Formula One on Sky. And there was Formula One on Sky had a couple of hundred thousand more than Formula E
on
free to view on Channel 5 did. And I tweeted out and I made the comment that, oh, amazing that you put free to view motorsport on and people watch it.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it?
Never mind. I'm not going to talk about Formula One anyway. That's not our bag. We've moved on.
No, there's many more people who do it much better than us for a start.
Quite.
Yeah, want to know why we don't talk about Formula One? There it is. Anyhow, that brings us neatly to somewhere about possibly the middle of the show, and that point where I ask you for a few moments of your time to leave a star rating and a review for us via the podcast playing platform of your choice. As I say every week, the most powerful and popular podcasting platform of all is iTunes. So if possible, a 5-star rating there is hugely influential. It only takes a few moments of your time and it means an awful lot to us. Other podcast apps such as Stitcher, Downcast, Overcast and the like allow you to rate, upvote, so on and so forth. So a rating there would also be fantastic. Don't forget that Rear View is a different thread and a different stream from this motoring podcast news show. So if you enjoy Rear View with Andrew and his guests every week, then please take a moment to like and rate that as well. If you have done that for both, then thank you so much. And please don't forget to tell a friend, tell some family, and show people how to subscribe to podcasts, because that's fantastic, not just for us, but for other podcasters as well. I think that does us for a note from our non-sponsor, a word from our non-sponsor even.
Yeah, I'm going to move on now. This was something that we didn't have time to discuss last week. But a week Friday ago, I went to Soho.
Ooh. And survived.
And I visited the House of Hyundai. Ooh.
Did they have a red light outside?
You see, I never thought about anything like that. And I happened to mention it to one of the parents at dropping off time. And they just laughed and went, oh yeah, Soho, on a Friday night. House of Hyundai, is that what it was called? I'd have thought, oh no, I didn't. No, it wasn't. No, it was nothing. It really wasn't anything like that at all. It's the opposite of that, in fact. What it is it's part results of a project Hyundai are doing called the Ioniq project. Now, you may have heard us talk about Ioniq before because I was at the launch not so long ago. But the Ionic Project is Hyundai's investigation into what the future development of travel will be. So in this instance, they have been investigating how emotion is a factor for people in cars. Now, we've commented a few times on this show before, Alan, about how many manufacturers, if not all of them, are all saying, oh, we're bringing emotion into the designs of our EVs and autonomous cars. And it has to be a worry for manufacturers, because how do you make something that is electrified and does the driving for the person engaging on an emotional level?
Quite.
And that is... I do not know the answers to that, by the way, anyone. If I did, I would be trying to sell them to all the car manufacturers. But the interesting thing is that Hyundai were trying to establish what are emotions and how are they triggered with people using cars today. So they had six areas set up in this location in Soho, which were the taste, hearing, smell, touch, and sight zones, as well as the ionic zone itself, which was...
So that's the five senses.
Yes, the five senses, the ionic zone, which were the cars that were outside that people could get in and get a feel of and, you know, see how they executed it at this stage in the project. Because it's clear to say that this is a long-term project for Hyundai, and the Ioniq car is just the first physical output of that consumers can get hold of or buyers can get. So it was laid out over two levels, and the first...
But it was only open for like two evenings by ticket,
yes,
wasn't it?
But it was
open to the public, but it wasn't wide open for weeks. It was only two nights. Hmm.
You had to apply for a ticket and things. So the first area was of taste, and there was a massive queue all night long for this bit, because the company involved would take a 3D scan of your face. And that would then be carved into the chocolate on the end of a lollipop stick. So you could go, you came away.
Sorry, that's really
with,
cool.
A chocolate lollipop of your face, if you so desired.
What a wonderful present for Mrs. Windscreen.
I didn't go to that bit because the queue was too big. So it allowed me more time in the others. But what the whole tie-in about that was, you know, is that food is going to move into a much more personalised, and this, I think, was the key word that came out for me after the whole evening, but food is going to move into a more personalised way it is delivered to us. And machines, it's going to, you know, it's not too far away from the Star Trek machine that delivers what you ask, go up and ask, because 3D printing is being tested by NASA for producing food and things like that.
Oh, don't go with 3D printing. Sorry. 3D printing just bugs me when everybody goes on about it, because I used to work in an office with a 3D printer 10 years ago.
Yeah, but it's now accessible by general members of the public. That's the key thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
So it can make you something which is not entirely unlike tea.
Yes, quite. The next area was hearing, and they spoke to Spotify, and Spotify analysed and created a playlist of the top 100 songs. This is UK based, top 100 songs for an ultimate driving playlist. Songs from the 70s made up nearly 40%. Rock songs made up nearly 60%. And there's some typical ones that you would expect, but unlike many, 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 if not nearly all driving playlists, they weren't all songs with road or driving in the title.
Drive by the Cars is not up near the, is certainly not in the top 10.
No, they've got AC/DC. They've got Free. What else have they got? I'm just trying to throw some others.
Actually, the first one I've... Oh, no, Mustang Sally's at 20th. That kind of went.
Fleetwood Mac.
Talking Heads, Road to Nowhere.
Jerry Rafferty's got...
Basically, I'm going to be recreating this in a different streaming music app. So, yeah. Yeah, lots of... To be honest, if you can think of a song that's probably going to be in the driving list, then the chances are it's going to be in there. I mean, there's lots of Springsteen, lots of Meatloaf.
It seems to be lots of songs that are
lots
quite
of yellow,
upbeat,
yeah,
and... will remind people of good times, I think.
Yeah,
and that was also a theme throughout this. So I moved downstairs then, and we went to the smell zone. And what is it? They had a, I don't know if the technical term is nose or perfumer, but this lady that creates smells and creates scent by combining many different ingredients together. And at the because what we were being told was that smell is very good at evoking a memory, something to do with where the nasal sensors are combined to, or the proximity to your memory recall area of your brain. And we were given various scents to sniff and see if we could recognise, and I am...
Which is remarkably hard.
Yeah, well, I am a man, and I have a dreadful smelling capability, so I was pretty appalling at this, actually. Mm-hmm. But there was plenty of others that were there at the same time as me that could get these, so... but at the end of it, what the lady created through discussing it with many people before the night, there was two smells that really evoke such strong happiness emotions. One was the seaside and the other one is the woods. Mm-hmm. So we came away with two small bottles of those scents, which now I don't know whether it was a case of because she'd said that I could recognize the smell or because, like I said, my nose is that of a Philistine's. But, you know, the one that was the sea did smell of the seaside, and the one that was the wood was definitely the wood. So it's a bit of a step up from a ripped cardboard pine tree hanging off your rearview mirror, to say the least. But it's one possible execution of this down the line is that... you know, maybe the car...
This isn't going to be in-car air freshness, is
yes,
it? Like
is.
The 7 Series and...
Well, a step S-class up from that, because, again, it's going to be personalisation.
Hmm.
You know, this is me surmising... This is me surmising now, by the way. This isn't anything that was directly spoken... I was directly talked to anybody about. But you could see, similar with the music, that if the car is sensing... the driver or the passengers, and they're sensing things like heart rate and emotion, you know, that someone's getting, say, cross. So suddenly what that person finds as relaxing music is piped through, or there's a scent that is gently diffused into the cabin that reminds them of happier things to help calm them down. Mm-hmm. So then maybe that dissipates a potential road rage incident. You know, yeah. I can... Apart from that whole sensing the people in the cabin thing, which is a little bit creepy, and I maybe
yes,
it's my tinfoil hat at that point, but getting over that, you know, if we are preventing something negative from happening down the line, that's not a terribly bad thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's one execution.
I missed a bit of that, sorry, because my connection is playing up slightly at this end. So I'm going to nod and smile and agree with what you've just said.
That is the wise choice. It is the choice of champions.
It came in, I thought, oh, gee, he's going to be sitting there waiting for me, and then you were still talking, so it was fine.
Yeah. then we moved on to the touch zone, which was a really interesting chap, actually, who's got his own clothing design company.
What was he called, Andrew?
I cannot possibly try and pronounce it, because he's from Scandinavia, and I will butcher his name, and no.
I think it's Akersdijk is the surname. Right. Robert Akersdijk, I would imagine.
But this was interesting, because one of the products he had there was a coat that ionized the air, because it had the technology in it and the power supply to help do this. Now, you could easily see that being transferred into the interior of a car. That improves the air quality and all the rest of it. So technology being incorporated into materials and fabrics in areas that we're not expecting, say, on the top of the dashboard or the cards of the door cards, or, you know, the seat itself or the back of the seats. You know, there's a lot of area that isn't actually used for anything other than is covered and is over the top of another material. There's plenty of redundant space at the moment that could be could be used. I mean, you think of the roof lining. There's a massive amount of cloth that is just a bit of cloth, so you're not looking at tin. So, so there's potential. It starts you thinking, which I think is part of what they want Hyundai want to do and what they were trying to do for themselves. But it starts you thinking, oh, hang on. We don't just have to do it this way. There's opportunities now. We've technology is at such a point that there's opportunities to take advantage of different areas of the vehicle. But the last area was sight, and this was one part of it was a compilation of the top 10 British driving roads taken from the most popular lists that are available to us. So it's things like from the AA and websites. Like that.
And some newspapers as well.
Yeah, there was some of them I'm not going to mention. So we've got these, they've got these top 10 lists that they've compiled and broken down, and then they've selected the ones that were most picked or most suggested. Mm-hmm. And then they have the company that was there with Hyundai had taken a drone and filmed the number one road, which was the A686, the roof of England, Penrith to Haydon Bridge. Apparently.
I'm sure I've been over that one. It must have been.
Yes, I've done that one. This could have been our list of the week, actually.
This could have been our list of the week. It could even become our list of the week.
The A82 was number two, which is...
Mm-hmm. That's a fine road if you can get it when there's... not loads of coaches on it.
So. Yes, I was lucky on that one. Number three is the A4069, which is the Black Mountain Pass. I've not been on that. Then number four is the A39, which is the Atlantic Highway, which I have driven. Number five is the Evo Triangle.
I've driven part of that a few weeks ago.
I know, I saw pictures. Mm-hmm. We actually drove part of that for the Ioniq launch as well.
All right. Gosh, I didn't realize you'd been that far across.
Yeah, that's where we went, and got to put the electric car in sport mode.
Whoa.
Which was, did make a bit of a difference.
Yeah, you said, didn't you?
Number six is the,
It's Welsh. You're better qualified than I am.
Abergwesyn Pass, I think. Sort of Midwest Wales. Tregaron to Llynbrian. Brian, I think. Oh, I do apologise to anyone who can speak Welsh or who just had to listen to me. Number seven.
Apology accepted.
Number seven is the B3306, which is St. Ives to St. Just in Cornwall. I drove that. Number eight is the Snake Pass. Driven that.
I have driven that one.
Number nine is the A2, the Glens of Antrim. I have not driven that.
Yeah, in Northern Ireland. Yeah.
And number 10 is the B3135 Cheddar Gorge. And I've driven that. And
no, not driven.
And I've listened to people doing fast and furious round it as well till one in the morning. which was...
I think we covered that months ago.
Yes, last year.
Did talk about that because you were still angry.
So, actually, some interesting roads there.
Yeah. It sounds like it was a really interesting evening.
It was. I went in.
You were a little sceptical beforehand.
Yes, I was quite sceptical because, as I said at the top of this bit, all the manufacturers are talking about emotion. And all of them are talking about how, you know, that their cars are going to engage with people, even though they're going to be electrified, even though they're going to be autonomous and all the rest. So it was interesting to see a manufacturer in the process of working that out and establishing and helping us establish what emotions are actually triggered in a car. What are good emotions, positive emotions, such as, you know, our favorite memory from holidays, you know, it's the beach or the woods, things like that. You know, that was interesting to see. And the breadth that they're looking at to help them develop their products for the future. From that point of view, I found it fascinating, actually. And the people they had there were great, really engaging and really happy to talk to you. And they were fascinating. I mean, stuff I wouldn't have normally have looked into. I was glad I did.
So it sounded like fun. We did, yeah.
But for me, personalization was the main thing that came out of that. That personalization is key. For this to work, they need to know so much about you to understand what is positive and negative for you. So there we go.
Yeah. Cool. No, that sounds really interesting. I'm slightly jealous, to be honest. That sounds like it was a really interesting evening.
It was.
It's the kind of fun stuff that I like.
I've waffled on quite a bit there. Sorry.
You have waffled on quite a bit, and I suggested that became our list of the week, and that wasn't taken up upon. So, list of the week this week is the Green Apple Awards, which was a new one by me. So, thank you, Andrew. So, the Green Apple Awards were presented in the House of Commons, and they singled out cars that are both good to drive and economical in the real world. The awards are organised by the Green Organisation and judged by members of the Midland Group of Motoring Brands. Shall we run through them in full? So for each of the categories, there is a winner and a runner-up. So beginning at the beginning, which is at the smaller end, is the Super Mini category. And this year, the champion was the Suzuki Celerio Jewel-Tech, with the Mazda 2 1.5 diesel coming in second spot this year, having won last year.
And that's interesting because that is another example of Mazda having a larger... We were discussing this last week, I think, sticking with the larger engines.
It wasn't actually on last week's news show, mate. It was the thing that we did in between.
Was it? I thought we'd mentioned it. Okay, this is all blurring into one now.
I think it was. I don't know. It's all blurring for me too, but I'm sure we talked about that and the thing we did in between. But yes, Mazda and the Skyactiv stuff. So this is a Skyactiv D engine, which is slightly bigger capacity, but the way that they run them is quite clever. And I've learned some other things about how the Skyactiv D engines work during the week, speaking to an owner as well.
Ooh.
Quite interesting. Yes, I should bore you with that some other time.
Cool.
In smallest family cars, second place this year went to the Honda Civic 1.6 iDTEC, which is what you had last. You've driven one of those, haven't you?
Yes, I've driven the 1.6 DTEC in another vehicle. I had a 1.8 petrol.
Oh, pardon me. My apologies.
But I am a big fan of the 1.6 iDTEC engine.
It was nice in the CRV. Yeah, worked well on the CRV. But the winner was the Vauxhall Astra 1.6 CDTI 110 EcoFlex, which just trips off the tongue, with the Midland Group judge commenting that the new Astra shows a lot of life left in diesels. Larger family cars, two Germans in the running. Second place was the BMW 320d ED. With the winner being the Volkswagen Passat or 1.6 TDI Blue Motion. In smaller SUVs and 4x4s, in second is the Nissan Qashqai 1.5 DCI 110 two-wheel drive. Whereas the... Oh, yeah. The winner is its transmission partner, essentially, the Desha Duster 1.5 DCI 110 4x2. And if that sounds a familiar nomenclature, it's because it's going to be the same engine and gearbox. But the Desha one, because it's cheap, it's cheerful, it's rugged, does what it says in the tin without any fuss or needless frills. So, yeah, there's a fine piece of sharing. That, by the way, relates right the way back to the story at the start of the show with the Renault being investigated, because it kind of makes me curious that if the Renault diesel engines are being investigated, will that have an impact on Nissan and Dacia and all the other companies that share those same engines? But I forgot to say that at the time. Mm. I've remembered now. Pure electric and hybrid cars. Second is the Toyota Prius, and first is the rather lovely looking, in my eyes, Renault Zoe.
We've got three now in our town. We've got two more have turned up in the last 2 weeks.
I see more and more of them. I mean, they've got that humongous range. There are amazing lease deals on them. I just think if there were more Renault Zoes on the roads, I don't think it would be a bad thing. Certainly not from an aesthetic point of view.
No.
Yeah, that's me suggesting buying an electric car purely because it looks nice. I don't care about the drivetrain. In executive cars, second place, Jaguar XF E-Performance. But the winner is the Audi A6 2-litre TDI Ultra. Everybody likes the A6 diesels in there as well. So the overall winners... The overall Green Apple champions for 2016. Second spot's the Audi A6. And the top spot is the, I've just praised its little socks off, Renault Zoe.
Congratulations, so, Renault.
There we go. Congratulations, Renault, and well done to the Green organisation.
Yes, there will be a link to their to those awards and via their website, which I accept no responsibility for their website. It is appalling.
It's absolutely hideous.
It is awful, and not everything is on it, but that's the best we can do. So you will see it there. So, but it was interesting to see that that it was being judged on good to drive as well as economical.
Worth mentioning, they seem to give out green awards for a number of different things.
Yes.
So if that kind of thing interests you, if you are interested in what the most ecologically friendly and the greenest, just the greenest shopping centres, consultancy companies, IT consultancy companies, healthcare trusts, all these things, there is a whole load on the list of their environmental best practice awards. Which I'm sure will be linked to if you can look through their
stomach
website.
The website.
The website's quite.
Right, we're going to move on now.
Anyway, Andrew, in the past, as someone who has made fun of me talking about websites, about how about missing road junctions and all sorts of things.
Bridges.
Then it kind of surprised me, bridges as well, yeah, bridge construction. It kind of surprised me that you'd found this and had included it.
Well, yeah, I nearly did just leave that for you, but I thought it would be unfair considering I did spot it and thought, that. As I straightened the glasses on my nose and rearranged the pens in my top pocket, I thought that's quite interesting, that is, actually. But this is about... Great Britain's roads are numbered. And there is actually a scheme. I spotted this because a friend of the show, Liam Bird, retweeted the original tweet, because that's what you do when you retweet. And
funny, though.
Yes. I suspected that there was a way that it was done, but I didn't know what it was. So there's going to be a link to a Wikipedia, which we know is always correct, but a Wikipedia article with a nice little map that explains what the numbering zones are for A and B roads in Great Britain. So that answers the questions that occasionally burns in my mind as I drive around the country.
I have no way of following that up.
Well, you could do a grand tour.
We could do a grand tour. Yes, you're quite right. So there is a new... you might have heard about it. It's been mentioned once or twice by some people. But it turns out that this coming Friday, that's the 18th?
Yes.
This coming Friday, Jeremy Clarkson, Richard Hammond, James May are back with The Grand Tour, a show about adventure, excitement, and friendship. As long as you accept that the people you call friends are also the ones you find extremely annoying. Sometimes it's even a show about cars, and you can follow them on their global adventure, say Amazon. So, Amazon Prime Video, if you happen to have a subscription to that, then it will be out on... then the first season will start on Friday. It's going to be one show of approximately an hour-ish.
I believe so.
Supposedly a week for the next 12 weeks or so, which is quite a lot of television, actually. And that's coming out. If you don't have an Amazon Prime subscription, then I'm sure it'll be on other ways of getting it. If you don't want to pay for stuff, I'm sure there will be a way that you can get it. But personally, I'll be watching it on my Amazon Prime subscription.
Well, they've got the 30-day free, haven't they? If you've never signed up with Amazon Prime before.
Oh, that's true. If you've never signed up before, you will get 30 days free. So that's the first four Grand Tours. Or you wait till the end and they do 30 days free and then you binge watch it. But it does mean that when the second series, which seems to have already been commissioned, then you won't be able to. You will have to actually cough up for that. Mm. Or get yourself a new email address, of course. But personally, I'm really looking forward to it.
That at all.
I should point out, make it complete, that I am absolutely not advocating that. I have an Amazon Prime subscription. I will be watching it via Amazon Prime Video. And if I didn't, to be honest, I would probably have taken one out for this. But I really have one because I buy far too much stuff from
it. Yep, I'm looking forward to it, I've got to say. And who don't or didn't enjoy what the chaps were doing towards the end of their time on the old Top Gear, perhaps don't watch this. And if you do watch it and you didn't like it, and you knew you weren't going to like it, don't tell us all that you don't like it, because you knew you weren't going to like it, so why did you put yourself through that?
Don't darn well watch it.
Yeah. And then put us through that. So I may not be on social media on Friday night when I watch the first show. But I'm really looking forward to it, because looking at the trailers, it does look good fun. Again, what we want from the
shot.
Top Gear people is good fun, beautifully shot, entertainment that occasionally involves a car, as Amazon said.
And don't forget that fellow podcaster and automotive journalist and sniff petrolist Richard Porter has also been doing the writing for it, which got the script editing for it as well. So I'm looking forward to that. To be honest, in the interest of balance, I'm also looking forward to the next series of Top Gear. Mm. Everyone seems to be forgetting that, but I'm kind of hoping to learn from the last one. And the changes that have been made will chill it out a bit with less shoutiness. So I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, so I don't want to go over old ground though, but...
Just don't go over old ground, but which is different, but I'm looking forward to the next series of that as well, whenever it's coming out, and I know that they're filming it, so that should be good.
Yep. Right.
More car watchy stuff are good.
Yes. The more stuff that's on, the better. More stuff that's on is what we said earlier on in the year.
Yes.
Right. I need to thank Lee Walton for sending or copying me on this tweet. That there's a lot of tweets here that Well, there are lots of items that people have made us aware. So thank you very much, everybody. And please do continue doing that. If you think this is something that is right up our alley or something we should be aware of, then do tweet us in the usual places that we will mention at the end of the show. But this was a report on a talk given by Charlie Miller, who, if you're not aware of, was one of the two chaps that hacked a Jeep vehicle, not once, but twice. Once when they were in it, and then they did it another time remotely while it was driving along the highway to raise awareness that car security is a major issue. Now, people listening to this show probably have missed that I feel that car security is a bit of an issue as well. And it is something, you know, again, they're not going to notice.
Do you know, this is a 70-second podcast, and I've never noticed that, Andrew.
But he now works at Uber. And what he was essentially saying is that, look, car security is not good. It still is not good. It's not transparent. The way that some manufacturers are doing things is not best practice. It's not. It's not. They're not sharing knowledge amongst themselves, which is very tricky when you're in such a competitive industry. But there should be certain things that they realise, hang on, this damages all of us. If it damages one, it damages all of us. And considering we are being told by manufacturers all the time how connected cars, that's what we're demanding as consumers. I'd love to see evidence, but never mind, gloss over that. But that is the way it's going. I mean, that's happening. Whether I like it or you as the listener like it, it doesn't matter. Cars, more and more cars are being connected, and the level of connection is going deeper and deeper into our everyday lives. So we as consumers need to demand that you want us connected, okay? You have to prove to us that it is not detrimental to us to connect. If we connect to you, you are not going to expose us to either physical danger or loss of data danger or loss of our equipment or loss of financial things through such things as ransomware. Because you could see that being such a big thing that's happening now through IT hacks. You look at NHS trusts are being hacked and they are being told you have to pay X hundreds of thousands of pounds into this account or you cannot get your computers to work. That's hospitals are being targeted.
In the US, yeah.
No, in the UK.
In the UK as well? Wow.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't realise that. Yes.
In the UK, that's happened. So for people to sit, you know, it's affecting us all and it's affecting us now. Not that many people are aware because we're so happy on our phones and, oh yeah, I'll sign up to that. I don't read the terms and conditions, blah, blah, blah. So we need to be really need to be putting the onus back on the manufacturers and saying, go on then, prove it's safe. And nothing is ever going to be 100% safe. I'm not naive. But you have to prove to me that you are making every step you can to make it as difficult and as hard as possible to hack. And this is a bona fide expert of someone who has done hacking and someone who is employed now by a serious mobility company to make sure this doesn't happen to them. And he's saying, it's not good out there. No. We need to take note of that. And I now step down from my soapbox.
No, you're right. And it's well worth... Have a little read of this VentureBeat article. It's not hugely long.
It's a nice, easy read as well. It's not...
It is a nice, easy read. It's not heavy going. And not pointing you towards auto news or anything. So... Please, it's pretty in-depth stuff. So, yeah, definitely have a read. It's, to be honest, of all the articles we're pointing you towards this week, if you have to choose one to read in the lunchtime, then this is the one to read.
Yep.
In my humble opinion. So, yeah.
I think that's nearly it now, Alan.
Yeah, it is nearly it. There's one, and finally, and that is to nudge you towards the Car Fiction film from last week with racing driver Natalie McGloin in it. I watched it at the weekend, and I've just accidentally pressed the button, so hopefully you can't hear that. So Natalie McGloin is the only female racer in the UK with a spinal injury, can drive only using her hands without her legs or anything. And it's talking all about her Porsche. Is it a Boxster or a Cayman? Cayman, isn't it?
It's a Cayman.
Oh, it's a Boxster with a hard top.
Ah. Right.
I can't remember if it's a box with a hard top or a Cayman. My apologies, straight off there. But about her and her racing and how she came to be racing that way, it's 7.5 minutes of your time.
And the company she set up.
And just some of the stuff she does. She's a fantastically interesting lady. Definitely, she's so worth following on Twitter as well.
Yep.
Which, it's her own name. Basically, is her Twitter handle.
In the show notes.
In the show notes, thank you very much. So, watch the video. There's no... You don't notice anyone asking questions or anything. It's her speaking and film and stuff. And it's Car Fiction, so it's beautifully put together on there. And, yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, my only criticism was it wasn't long enough.
Wasn't long enough. Yeah, that was what I thought too. Yeah. So a little.
So, if Mr. Goy is listening, your audience demands more, please.
Yes. Yes, quite.
Particularly of really interesting people like this.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Because what I chuckled at was that she kept. And spoiler alert, by the way. If you don't want to know more, stop now. Give it 30 seconds and start again.
Don't.
But she kept mentioning how people kept saying to her, well, I don't think you should do that. And she just went, I'm going to, thank you. And I thought that was
yes,
awesome.
Yes, I noticed that as well. This is a bit of a thing that if you tell Natalie McGloin that she's not going to be able to do something, then she'll dashed well go and do it. fantastic. Watch it. Just over 7.5 minutes of your time, which, again, is time well spent.
Watch it, like it, share it.
Yes, totally. Please do. That is a good point. Let me go here. Oh, no, I have already liked it. There we go. Problem solved. In there. So that brings us to the end of this week's show, actually.
It does.
It does. Pretty much on schedule as well. So, between now and next week, don't forget you can give us any feedback. Share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And as Andrew said, it's fantastic that so many of you are and suggesting stories. And I don't want to use the word engagement like that, but it really is. It really is great. Ooh, I'll just slap myself later.
Chatting to us.
It's great. That's what we like. It makes a huge difference. It's great to know what people are interested in, what we should include as well, rather than it just being us going, I think people will like that story. You can share your thoughts to the show on Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, which is the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget to leave a review rating on iTunes for both Motoring Podcast News Show and Rear View, or however your podcast app let you do such a thing. As I say, every week it really does matter. But now I've said all that, Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, if people want to send me articles or interesting pieces that require me to don my tinfoil hat, if they search for @crackwindscreen on Twitter, that would be the perfect place. And how about you, Alan, if people want to point out how you have names wrong and countries wrong, what's the best way?
And the wrong version of his YouTube Piazza as well. Yes, Twitter is the best for me, where I'm at AJP Bradley, Bradley. We'll be back next week. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.